Senate will please come back to order. The first item for business is messages from the House.
February the 6th, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message number, third reading, passed amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill number 107, Interstate Medical Licensure Compact, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill number 138, Workers' Compensation for Special Education Teachers, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill number 149, Special Non-Resident Hunting License Draw, ayes 44, noes 15, excused 1. House Bill number 152, Industrial Siding Impact Payments, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill number 183, Insurance Coverage, Early Refill of Prescription Eye Drops, ayes 58, noes 1, excused 1. House Bill number 186, Human Trafficking, Forfeiture of Property, ayes 49, excused 1. House Bill number 193, Veteran Burial Teams, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill number 225, Highway Patrol Security Duties, ayes 59, excused 1. House Joint Resolution 10, Magna Carta, ayes 46, noes 13, excused 1. House Bill number 118, Education Community College Commission Budget Request, ayes 48, noes 11, excused 1. House Bill number 143, Motor Vehicle Registration Fees, ayes 40, noes 19, excused 1. And House Bill number 192, Education Hathaway Scholarship Program, ayes 31, noes 28, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. February the 6th, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill number 47, Shipment of Wine, ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1. House Bill number 211, Post-Conviction Actual Innocence, ayes 53, noes 6, excused 1. And House Bill number 228, Subdivision Family Exception, ayes 59, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
The next order of business is introduction of the Senate budget bill. And let me explain. Pursuant to Joint Rule 14.1b, it's typically the practice to read the bill in and refer it directly to committee of the whole. Our counterparts on the House read in the budget bill last night and referred it directly to the committee of the whole. They just read the text. Pretty interesting process because they didn't put it into the committee of the whole. But they wanted to get the budget out so that members could look at it, and they did an explanation. Not to be outdone, we're going to go ahead and read in the budget bill, but instead of referring it to committee of the whole, we'll refer it to general file, and we'll bring it up at committee of the whole at the direction of the majority floor leader. So, Senate File 1. First reading of the bill.
Senate File 1, General Government Appropriations, sponsored by the Joint Appropriations Committee.
Senate File 1 is assigned and referred to General File to be managed by the Majority Floor Leader. That will allow the reproduction and the distribution of the bill so everybody will get a copy of the bill. I think we'll have an explanation of the bill, but before we go there, Senator Burns, would you like to have privilege of the floor?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. May I have Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
Mr. Chairman, under Senate Rule 1210, I would ask for reconsideration vote on Senate File 129, Medicaid Share Plan, and I would ask the body to vote no.
The motion is to reconsider Senate File 129, and you've been asked to vote no. The bill or the amendment is the motion is non-debatable, but the process is. Senator Rothes.
Mr. President, point of order. There's only one reconsideration vote allowed on any given piece of legislation. That reconsideration vote already took place. This is out of order.
I didn't hear that. Would you please restate the...
Wait. Mr. Chairman, never mind.
Never mind. Thought he was going to jump ahead of you from yesterday, huh? Yeah, I know that feeling. All right. The motion is to reconsider Senate File 129. You've been asked to vote no. Roll call.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
No.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Kraft? Dockstetter?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Kinski?
No.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
Excused.
Pappas?
Aye.
Perkins? Peterson?
No.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Scott?
No.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
No.
President Nicholas?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 10-aye, 19, no, 1 excused.
By your vote, the motion to reconsider Senate File 129 has failed. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Members of the Senate, I had passed out for you today a sheet, which is the JAC Rex appropriations by expenditure and revenue categories. And I just simply wanted, as a result of the general file or the bill being the budget bill being read in today, wanted to at least bring you up to date so that you know as much as the House knows. And so, if you were to take out this sheet and your goldenrod, you would see that there are three what we're calling tranches on the sheet. One is green, one is blue, and the other is tan.
Taupe.
Or taupe. What this budget bill that you're going to see is something that you've probably never seen before, because we're really kind of betting on the come to a certain extent in tranche 2 and tranche 3. Because those are, and I'll go through this sheet with you. But understand that when we started this, we had a $222 million deficit. So if you were to look at column number one, which is expenditure category, immediate needs, you will see at the bottom below there where we got money for this immediately to balance the budget. First of all, we took, we got $34 million in reversions from 13-14 biennium. We took the SIPA money that was sitting there and transferred it over. So that's $21 million. We also had, as a result of Senate File 70, $140 million in reversions. That's a one-time money. Basically, all of this is one-time money. Then we had a Craig underestimated with regards to some gas, and I think there's also some additional production in there, but primarily natural gas. So we had another $44 million. So first we had to fill the hole, which is the $222 million. And then that left about $18 million that we could spend right now. That there's money that we know we have. So what I want to say to you is that when we left JAC, we left, we did do a number of these appropriations, and that we left in that first tranche $8.8 million. Now, if you were to take out your goldenrod, and if you went to page two of your goldenrod, under appropriations, you would see a list of bills there that have appropriations on them. And so when you take those into consideration, rather than $8.8 million in available money, we now have, because it's now, these are, once they've gone through Committee of the Whole, they become profiled here, and we now have the figure that you see at the bottom of column one that is available left, that we know that we have left to spend, and that is $4.4 million. There are some other bills out there. There's one with a big appropriation on it, approximately $10 million. Well, keep this in mind, there isn't $10 million in this first tranche. It's just not there. So then what we did is we said, okay, this is not a time for us to dig our heads in the sand. Let's be proactive, and let's try to fund things that we think are high priority needs, and your JAC did that. But in order to do that, once again, we're relying primarily on unforecasted but anticipated investment earnings. So what we did in the second tranche, we captured $40 million from SIPA that was to go to the healthcare facilities, pulled that in, or it's not included in healthcare facilities, it's other SIPA money, $40 million that should be there. And then we have the forecasted but anticipated investment earnings, $76 million, leaves you about $116 million that potentially we could spend if it's available July 1 or June 30th, but July 1 of 2015. And you will see in the second tranche where you see the blue highlighted. You'll see, first of all, some of the things that your JAC felt were important to fund, and we prioritized them. And you'll see, for instance, the capital rehabilitation restoration is priority one. Gillette Madison, we had to come up with an additional $2.4 million to make that whole. We did some. We transferred about $10 million from a road in Carbon County to a potential company. And that would get us to finish up the Gillette Madison. I'm not going to go through all of these. But what we left with at JAC and what's still there is $3.8 million, if the money comes. Now, what's even more speculative is the third tranche. because that is in the TAN, the June 30th or July 1, 2016 tranche. They are contingent, unprofiled revenues. But we did the same thing, that if the money comes, we have prioritized once again how we would utilize those funds. For the most part, the expenditures that you see in this budget are one-time expenditures. And that is an important thing because, quite frankly, all of this money is one-time money. There's not a single dime that's recurring here. So that kind of explains the tranches. I want to also make it perfectly clear here that we had to do some novel things, like intercept the sweeps that would go to the LSRA, about $184 million. We've been transferring funds from other accounts, such as SIPA. When you do that, I mean, you gotta keep in mind that a lot of this may not happen if unless things our economy continues to stay at this rate. Hopefully, it won't, but we don't know. But clearly, your appropriations committee, I think, was proactive. We did our best to say, look, there are needs out in the communities. There are needs that need to be funded. We need to do capital construction, all of those things to maintain the economy within the state of Wyoming. I think your budget committee has done that. That's kind of a down and dirty explanation of how this budget really unfolds. You can use this to look at things that are important to you. I would suggest to you that when we get to the budget next week, if you're going to screw around with the budget bill, I have some friends. And you'll be sleeping with the fishes. all joking aside, if you're going to do that, you got to recognize that there's priorities here. If you're going to switch a priority because you think something's higher, you're going to have to decide which of those rankings you want to push down. And we'll have debate on that, and it'll be an interesting time. I'm so looking forward to it, Mr. President.
Discussion on the explanation. Senator Rothfuss.
Mr. President, thanks. That is at the question for the chairman that I was wondering is how we would debate that and what those amendments would look like. Have we worked through the process, if we want to look at reprioritizing how that's going to be? Has that been thought through and discussed? It seems like it could get kind of interesting, and particularly if we're stacking up a series of amendments and they all have to be drafted at the same time, I'm having a difficult time imagining what those amendments are even going to look like.
Senator Ross.
Mr. President, good question. Having not done this before, staff has worked on a matrix that will assist us, and so we know how to do that. And they've worked out a template for amendments so that we can track it. But the process will still be the same with regards to we'll do 2 days of committee of the whole, and then have your amendments in for second reading. And we'll take a day off, then we'll have third reading. And the same thing. You got to have your amendments in by 5 o'clock on that last day.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, different kind of a question, one I'll probably ask again toward the end of things. This is a supplemental budget. We've got the budget for the biennium in place. If some of us get nervous, there's too much betting of the come, and think of voting down the whole budget, going home without, is there anything in the budget bill we absolutely have to have? I know there's a bunch of things in here I think are very nice to have, but is there anything we absolutely have to have?
Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I think there are things in the budget that we have to have, and I would say the Madison Water Project we have to have.
Most definitely.
Good answer.
And you know what? I think the Capital Rehabilitation Project we have to have. And I think the safety of Highway 59 we have to have. I think there are things out there that we have to have. And I think if that's the position of the Senate, I think there's other things in here, the Help America Vote Act, constitutional amendment, reimbursement, those are things that we have to have. So on and in favor of the budget.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. The only point I was going to make because of the Minority Floor Leader's question is that if you think about this, and that's why it's so important that we get this matrix, if you decide to move from Tranche 3 to Tranche 2, and then all of a sudden when you come up to the total, you spent more than may be there if it's there, then what happens, if, unless you have some way set up, the bottom will just fall off. So there's a lot of things to consider, and I think the chairman will have a way to do this so it'll track and everybody can understand, but that's clearly the issue that you have when you try to do these. Now, on the first tranche, it's pretty clear, but then what if you want to move something from the third to the first? So we just got to be able to be sure that those that draft these amendments understand and we have it done in a way that works.
Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. And just to elaborate a little bit on what we really have to have, as the good tall senator from Natrona County, you know, I really believe the governor was very thoughtful in what he did, and then I think your JAC committee was very, very thoughtful. We made a lot of tough choices. We cut a lot of things. We moved some things around, and, you know, that certainly will be up to the body to decide the wisdom of that, and certainly free to make your choices there, but I think that there was an awful lot of hard work and an awful lot of thoughtful work that went into this.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Getting back to the question from my colleague from Natrona County, there's a couple things that are important to have, and probably some things that you'd really be interested in. For example, in the first tranche, Mr. President, if you look down here, for example, there's some rebasing for DD and an ABI rate provider. The rebase, according to that study, is not, the rebase of the nursing home rates, there's a significant amount in there that is kind of a down payment on what we anticipate in the next biennium. But ultimately, you know, if that isn't there, they would have to get by on the existing rates. There's some in the same with some of the community crisis crisis beds. Some others that are probably that are also probably essential, believe it or not, are when you go down to Agency 80 in the which is Department of Corrections on the adult community corrections and split sentencing. What your JAC did in the biennial budget is we only funded those particular programs for one half for the first part of the biennium. The reason was that as we looked at the data, we were not satisfied with the recidivism rate that was happening out of those two programs. So we only appropriated for the first half of the biennium with a request that you come back with a plan of how you're going to reduce the recidivism rates, increase the success rates under those two types of detention plans, and they did that. And so ultimately, if that money wasn't reappropriated, there's a chance that those two programs we would not have. There would certainly be a difficult and would severely impact the ability to provide adult community corrections and split sentencing for folks as they come out of prison and begin their reentry into back into society. So there's a few things like that in there, but as with all things, if the bill fails, Mr. President, Newton's law tells us for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. So we would see what would happen.
Senator Anderson?
Mr. President, if I may, Mr. President, in regard to process, I've been asked by the Vice President to chair the Committee of the Whole next Wednesday when we do the budget. I just remind you that we all know the rules of Committee of the Whole, that it does allow for unlimited debate and really no time limits. But I would urge you, as we go into this, it will be presented to you in sections. And so I would urge you to confine your questions to the end of the section. Be really on point in regard to what your question is. Attempt not to start the debate at that time. There'll be plenty of time for the debate. If you absolutely feel like you have to make a comment, go ahead. You're entitled under the rules. But I would just urge you to be very specific, very direct, very on point in regard to your questions at the end of each section. We'll then go ahead and make our way through the budget with the idea that we'll have a more general conversation in regard to the makeup of the entire budget near the end. And so with that, I would urge you to take your budget home, look at it very carefully. But the idea of being committed to the whole, the objective will be to come out of that with a clear understanding of what the document contains, and we'll give the committee every opportunity to present it in such a way that we can all understand. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Scott. Oh, I thought you were coming up. Any other discussion? Recall the process. Next week is a four-day week. The budget starts. It'll be split into 2 days for Committee of the Whole. That'll be Wednesday and Thursday. Your amendments for a second reading need to be into the Senate before we leave at 5 o'clock on Thursday. They won't be considered till second reading on the day after or the day following, at the next Tuesday following the four-day weekend. So be prepared. Be thinking about having your amendments in on the Thursday before we leave for the four-day weekend. The next item of business is reports from standing committees.
February the 6th, 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 55, Engrossed Solid Waste Program Amendments, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Senators Anderson, 28, Cole, Cooper, Rothfuss, Von Flader, and Senator Von Flader, and Chairman. February the 6th, 2015, Mr. President, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 128, Election Runoffs, reports back with a recommendation of do pass failed in accordance with Senate Rule 5-4. Aye, Senators Burns and Hastert. No, Senators Perkins, Ross, and Wassenberger. Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 6th, 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 96, Special Investigator, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass failed in accordance with Senate Rule 5-4. Aye, Senators Hastert. No, Senators Burns, Perkin, Ross, and Wassenberger. Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, House Bill 55, Solid Waste Program Amendments, it has appropriation, and so without objection, I ask that it be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Senate File 55 is re-referred to Senate Appropriations Committee Number 2.
House Bill. It's House Bill.
Oh, excuse me. Let me back up. House Bill 55 is re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that brings us to that order of business, consideration on bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move the Senate resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole to discuss bills on general file.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion is granted. Senator Meyer.
Oh. Don't mess it up.
No problem.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. The first file for our consideration will be there we go. We got some files now. Senate file 124, sales and use tax. Will the reading clerks please reading the bill?
Senate file number 124, sales and use tax enforcement, sponsored by Senator Cooper. It was referred to committee number 3, revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Driscoll, Kinsey, Landon, and Peterson. Senator Peterson, chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so if they do pass on Senate file 124. There is a standing committee amendment, and I ask for that amendment to be read at this time.
Clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate file 124, standing committee amendment number 1 to corrected copy, page 1, line 2.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 124, the corrected copy. And for further explanation on the amendment and the bill, I would turn it over to the good Senator, Senator Cooper.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow Senators, I'd like to cover the amendment first here today because pretty much the amendment covers the bill in itself. As you can see on the amendment, if you on the first page, they've lined out several items on the lines 1 through 5 there, and that's those disconforming amendments for the changes that are in further back in the bill. And also, if you get down to the beginning of section 1 on page 1, you'll see there's a couple of items have been taken out there, and that is also disconforming to cover the amendments in further in the bill. What the next item is, as you can see from the amendment, they have replaced the wording in lines 5 lines 5 through 9 there with a new paragraph, as you see. And then they've actually eliminated the rest of the page as it exists now and just added this one paragraph into it. And this paragraph basically says that if any vendor or taxpayer is 180 days or more delinquent on taxes due under this article and has not entered into a formal payment arrangement with the department and after 30 days, notice provided by a first-class mail, the department shall post monthly the name of the vendor or the taxpayer, the sales and use tax license number and physical address, unpaid balance owed by the vendor or taxpayer on the website of the department indicating that the vendor or taxpayer has not paid the tax due under this article. And as you can see, then they've eliminated the rest of this page. And on page 3, they've done the same thing. Now, the first section 1 under 3915108, that is the sales tax codes and or statutes there. When you go over to page 3 and you look at 3916108 under enforcement, this is your use tax laws, and they're both basically the same. So anything under that is just conforming amendments, and there are not as they stand both on sales tax and use tax. The rest of the amendment covers, they've eliminated all of page 4 and all of page 5, in the amendment, and of course they've left the last item, if I can get to it, on page 6, which is the section 2 and enactment, or the act is effective July 1 of 2015, and that's pretty much the bill and the amendment. And so, Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is, if I could, we have a vote on the amendment so that I can go through the rest of the discussion on the bill.
Are you ready for the question on Senator Peterson's motion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Question been called for. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 24, this bill has to do with the collection process for delinquent sales and use taxes from vendors. The average overall state delinquency for sales and use tax on the sales and use tax ledger represents an average of somewhere between $25 and $30 million at any given point in time. And if you consider this fact that this thing just keeps rolling over month after month after month, you can see that there's millions of dollars at stake here that could be lost, that are lost in revenue at times. Not only does the state lose out when these taxes are not remitted, but every city, town, and county also loses on these taxes. The Department of Revenue Excise Tax Division currently uses all the tools at its disposal in an attempt to collect these delinquent taxes, including criminal charges. The department also contracts with collection agencies to collect delinquent sales taxes for a fee of 12% of the amount collected. And on average, over the last 2 years, this has cost the state about $300,000 to collect $2.5 million. I'd say it's a pretty expensive proposition. This bill adds another tool for the department by requiring the publishing of a vendor's name on the Department of Revenue website if a vendor is delinquent 180 days or more. This process has been tried in other states and has had an effect of providing pressure from the public, which can also act as an effective deterrent. If a payment plan is worked out on the delinquent taxes with the department, the law provides the ability for the process to be put on hold as long as the vendor continues to make agreed payments. And, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill. I'd stand for questions.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion, and when the committee of the whole rises to report that I do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 124, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 124 is passed committee of the whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 144. Reading clerk, please read in the bill.
Yeah, where's Bill? Senate File 144, Microbreweries Minimum Barrel Requirement. Sponsored by Senator Nicholas. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Driscoll, Kinski, Landon, and Peterson. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass on Senate File 144, Microbreweries Minimum Barrel Requirement. There were no standing committee amendments, and for further explanation on this good bill, I would.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, this is a pretty simple bill. In order to have a microbrewery license, current law provides that there is a production minimum. That production minimum is 100 barrels per year. I was requested by a constituent to bring this to the legislature to ask for a reduction of that production minimum to 50 barrels per year. That's because this particular constituent operates a seasonal ski area near Laramie up in the Snowy Range. And they'd like to be able to operate their seasonal brewery during the winter time during ski season. But after ski season's done, they shut it down. And so they asked for this reduction. Another approach would have been to make an exception for seasonal producers. In consulting with the folks that are interested in this industry and their representatives and lobbyists, It was concluded that they would prefer to have simply a reduction as opposed to a seasonal exception. So with your support, I'd like you to vote aye on this bill to allow the reduced minimum production, to allow these seasonal operators to operate their breweries for part of the year.
Any questions? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, question. Why have a minimum requirement at all? Why not just get rid of it? Is there a limitation on the number of these licenses such that you don't want people getting them and just parking them? Is that why the minimum's there, or is there some other reason for it? Or could we just get rid of all the minimums?
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And my understanding of this is that the minimum is more or less a discouragement to give. I don't think there's necessarily a limit on these, but the idea is not to allow everybody to have their brewery in their basement out selling beer. And it could be that that's the fence, if you will, or the protection of the industry, but as it is, the limits are in statute, and they do protect the interests of people that are out and that make significant financial investment in these facilities. And I guess it's the idea was not to have a brewery on every corner.
Any further questions? Seeing none, question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 144, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 144 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 116. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 116, Legislature Compensation, sponsored by Senator Johnson. It was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas, Perkins, and Raffas. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Senator Nicholas.
I apologize. 116. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 116. And for an explanation of the bill, I would turn it over to Senator Johnson.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to start out by finding my place first. Reading Article 3, Section 6 of the Wyoming Constitution, the last full sentence. The compensation of the members of the legislature shall be as provided by law. But no legislature shall fix its own compensation, which means every district has to have gone through an election. The House districts, of course, 2 years, fairly easy. The Senate districts, there can be no pay raise for over 4 years. Senate File 16 does exactly that. It will raise the salaries of the legislators by $25 per day starting in 1919, 4 years from this session. I have a memorandum on your desk. On the top of it, it says SF 116 and then Johnson. And in 1985, $75, 1995, $125, 2005, $150. And we're obviously still at $150 for this biennium. And starting in 1919 will be 14 years rather than a decade as we have had in the past. So it's a simple bill. It does something that's quite simple. It takes care of any cost of living increases that have gone through in the last 14 years. And I ask for questions and a favorable vote.
Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, the question being called. All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the committee in the whole rise report that it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 116, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 116 is passed. Committee of the whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 133. Would the reading clerk please read in the file?
Senate File 133, Bighorn Sheep Relocation, sponsored by Senator Cooper. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural State Public Lands Water Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass, amended. I, Senators Barnard, Christensen, Dockstader, Emmerich, and Geis, Senator Geis, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass failed in accordance with Senate Rule 5-4. I, Senators Perkins and Ross, no. Senators Hassert and Wasserberger, excuse. Senator Burns, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Chairman, when the committee of the whole rise and report, I move Senate File 133 do pass, and I also like to have the standing committee amendment read in, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Cooper.
The clerk, please read the amendment in.
Senate File 133, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Corrected Copy 3, page 2, line 3.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Amendment Number 1 to Senate, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 133, and ask for your favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to dispose of the amendment. It's a fairly simple amendment, part of this bill to begin with. And if you look over on page 2, line 3, this is where this has been added. This was a recommendation by one of the stock groups, and they just wanted to make sure that that we added in conformance with the final report and recommendations from the Wyoming Statewide Bighorn Domestic Sheep Interaction Working Group dated September 2004. And that's what this amendment is about. They felt better if this was included. And I'd ask for your favorable consideration on this time to ask for the vote.
Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing no discussion, the question is on Senator Geis's motion that Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 133 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment 1 has passed. Committee of the Whole, we are back on the bill.
Thank you. Oops, I guess I had to wait until I'm recognized.
Senator Cooper?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 133, this bill provides an appropriation to the Game and Fish Department to relocate, if needed, a herd of approximately 13 head of bighorn sheep from the Darby Mountain area in the Wyoming Range within the Bridger-Teton National Forest. The area is located in Lincoln and Sublette counties and is part of the Grays River Ranger District. The Darby Mountain bighorn sheep herd is located in what they call a non-emphasis area. The non-emphasis area receives the lowest priority of bighorn sheep management. And if you look on the I passed out some information for you, a little packet, Senate File 133. You will see one thing in there that says, Appendix M. And if you look down there under the where it says Bighorn Sheep Non-Emphasis Area, as you can see on the last bullet point there, it says any existing bighorn sheep populations will not be protected at the expense of domestic sheep grazing in these areas. Just wanted to make a note of that. There's been some concern over the years that domestic sheep can transmit diseases to bighorn sheep. And because of this concern, the Forest Service Region 4 office in Ogden, Utah, of which the Bridger-Teton is a part of, is analyzing the possibility of implementing what they call the Payette Forest ruling on the Bridger-Teton. The Payette National Forest Court ruling creates a buffer zone of about 23 kilometers or around 15 miles between bighorn and domestic sheep interaction. If this ruling is implemented on the Bridger-Teton, there will be no NEPA process take place, which means that the state and local governments will have no input into any kind of decision concerning the grazing in this area. If the payout decision is implemented on the Bridge of Teton and these 13 bighorn sheep are permitted to remain in the Darby Mountain area, it will devastate the domestic sheep production in southwest Wyoming because of the domestic sheep grazing allotments that will be required to be withdrawn in order to create the buffer. Domestic sheep have been grazing in this area before the creation of the National Forest. Some of the families in this area have been grazing their sheep on Darby Mountain for four or five generations. The agriculture remains an important part of Lincoln and Sublette County's economic and social structure, and these grazing areas are an important component of the stability of that economic and social structure. The reason this bill is needed is that the Bridger-Teton is within the U.S. Forest Service Region 4 and is managed out of the Ogden, Utah office. Region 4 has not applied the Wyoming statewide bighorn domestic sheep recommendations into their forest plan. Region 2, however, out of Denver, has applied the recommendations into the forest management plans, which comprises all the other national forests in Wyoming. The only one, the forest that we have in Region 4 in the whole state of Wyoming is the Bridger Teton, which is over on the southwestern end of the state. So you can see the picture here. All this plan has been adopted by Region 2, which means all the forests in the state of Wyoming, national forests, are covered by that, except for the Bridger Teton on the far western side. This legislation is needed in order to provide for an action that would be taken at if the Region 4 office implements the payout ruling on the Bridger Teton. The hope is that the Forest Service will adopt the recommendations of the Bighorn Domestic Sheep Working Group as a management tool, and the action identified in this bill will not need to be taken. There is anticipation that this legislation will certainly have an influence for good on that decision. But at this point, however, fellow senators, the domestic sheep producers in that area have nothing to hang their hope on except for this bill. The adoption of the Wyoming Working Group recommendations by Region 4 office could take several years, so that is why this has a 2020 sunset date incorporated into the bill. And if you will note, you will see a copy of a section of the Working Group's plan that identifies why the amendment that was adopted earlier plays an important part in the process important process because it sets the stage for any action taken to be done in conformance with the Working Group's recommendations. And, Mr. Chairman, also I passed out, and you'll see in that little pack, a little grid sheet here of all the allotments that will be withdrawn. Now, we're talking 16,479 AUMs. One AUM is five sheep. So you can multiply that number times five to get the numbers. Around 80,000 head of sheep will be eliminated from this area. That's quite devastating. This is the report, as I put it, as I have sent to you, the final report of recommendations of the Wyoming Statewide Working Group as of September 2004. And as you see, I pointed out in here, I gave you a little sheet in the back that says the requirements of this working group for sheep when they have interaction with domestic sheep. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, I should probably, the bill is fairly simple, as I said, I'll go through the bill now. Section 1 just allows for the appropriation and tells you what they want to do on line 14 and 15 by removing and relocating the bighorn sheep if required, only if required. And then, if you go down on page two on lines 10 and 11, you will see that this appropriation shall not be included in the department's 2017 budget, so there will not be any funds forthcoming. These funds would revert back to the general fund if they're not used. Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd stand for questions.
Any discussion?
Questions?
Seeing no discussion, the question is on Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a do-pass motion on Senate File 133. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 133 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 130. Would the reading clerk please read in the bill?
Senate File 130, Lottery Commission Reporting Requirements, sponsored by Senator Burns. It was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Cole, Cooper, Rothfuss, Von Flatren, Senator Von Flatren, Chairman.
Senator Von Flatren.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report. It does so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 130, and I yield the floor to Senator Burns.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I would ask that it be read in, please.
The clerk, please read in the amendment.
Senate File 130, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that standing committee amendment, and I'll get to it presently. Mr. Chairman, this bill deals with the Lottery Commission and the Wyoming Lottery. As we know, it has been going, and what we have found is that they have spent about twice as much as they said they were going to spend on advertising, and then in addition to that, they have decided unilaterally to form a new lottery, a statewide lottery themselves. As a result, a number of us have been getting inquiries, pleasant and not so pleasant, from our local cities and counties because they thought they were going to be getting the money. And it turns out that the money they'll be getting has been put off because of this. As a result of this, one of the things I found out was that even though the original bill came through the TRW committee, the reporting requirement goes to the revenue committee. So all this bill really does is adds the TRW committee as getting one of these reports. There was also, if you look at lines 10 through 14, there's also a requirement that they meet with the committees upon the committee's requests. Mr. Chairman, Joint Minerals Business and Economic Development Committee found that language to be unnecessary since any committee chair can subpoena them anytime they want. And so the standing committee amendment is to remove that language from 10 through 14 as being basically superfluous. And with that, I would take questions on the standing committee amendment.
Any questions on the standing committee amendment? Seeing none, question being called for, the question on Senator Burns' motion that the standing committee amendment to Senate File 130 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment 130, number 1 to Senate File 130 has passed. We are back on the bill. Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, although there has been some concern that the money, the first $6 million going to towns and counties has been put off for a little bit while the debt is paid down, this bill does not take any sort of punitive action at this point, but we are increasing the monitoring of the Lottery Commission by adding the other committee. And with that, I would be glad to take any questions or vote on the bill.
Any questions? Seeing no discussion, the question is on Senator Von Flatren's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 130. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Senate File 130 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for consideration is Senate File 115. With the reading clerk, please read in the file.
Senate File 115, Discrimination, sponsored by Senator Rothfuss. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Kinsky, Von Flatren. No, Senator Hicks, Senator Christensen, Chairman.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 115. I believe there are standing committee amendments, but we'll let them deal with that. To further discuss the bill, I ask you to call on Senator Rothfuss.
Senator Ross.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I bring Senate File 115, Discrimination. Mr. Chairman, this bill is a bill about fairness and equity in the workplace, and it goes to some of the fundamental concepts of Wyoming, where we really want to just make sure that everybody's treated based on what they're capable of, what their skills are, what work they put in. Fairness and equality is at the heart of this legislation, and it's really a piece of legislation that I think is good for the economy in Wyoming and makes sure that we're doing everything we can for economic development, for good business, and to make sure that as the marketplace evolves over time, that we're not restricting access to our business community for businesses that are interested in potentially locating in Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to run through the legislation. It's relatively straightforward. It's simply a piece of legislation that adds sexual orientation or gender identity to the list of protected classes in a number of places in statute. We'll go through those in the second half of the bill, but the bill starts off on page one at the bottom with a religious exemption, recognizing that there are certain circumstances in which religious concerns might prohibit or require an entity from recognizing some of the limitations in this legislation on discrimination. And so it calls those out in 69104, the religious exemption, which indicates that nothing in this article or any other provision of law related to discrimination in employment shall be deemed to apply to any of the employment practices of religious or corporation, association, educational institution, or society, which has as its primary purpose religious ritual or worship. It goes on to include, in little b on page 2, the employment of individuals whose duties are ministerial, on line 11, and that they consist of teaching or spreading religious doctrine or belief. So even those entities, corporations, and associations that are employing somebody with a position that's largely ministerial would have that same exemption for that circumstance. Little c at the bottom of page 2 indicates that nothing in this article or any other provision of law related to discrimination shall be construed to limit the rights available to a religious corporation, association, educational institution, or society under any federal law or, as you can see on page 3, under the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. So, Mr. Chairman, right now there are a lot of protections in statute and in case law. Nothing in this legislation would circumvent First Amendment rights and other freedoms that are available. But this religious exemption on pages 1 and 2 clearly calls out in Wyoming statute that this exemption will continue. The rest of the legislation, Mr. Chairman, is simply going through statute and looking for circumstances where protected classes are listed and add to that list sexual orientation or gender identity. You can see on page 3, the first of those is qualifications of a juror, where it's added to the protected class list. The bottom of page 3, we see in Title 6, Crimes and Offenses, the miscellaneous offenses for discrimination are called out in 69101. Moving on to page 4, you can see at the top of that the addition of the additional protected classes. Lines 6 through 13, or 6 through 12, provide for penalties for those protected classes. The bottom half of page 4, we move on to administration of the governance and agencies and A&I, where we look at human resources division protections, and you can see that it's called out for a continued protective class. The bottom of page 4, indicating that each application shall be rated on the basis of suitability and qualifications without regard to political affiliation and the rest of the protected classes, with the addition of sexual orientation or gender identity. On page 5, we move to Title 14, which is children and child care facilities. Quality child care system being established, and the delivery of those services shall be without discrimination based on any of the protected classes. 19.14 we see on page 5 is Defense Forces and the creation of the Veterans Commission. Once again, you can see on page 6 that it calls out identification in addition to those protected classes. On page 6, charter school eligibility prohibiting discrimination adds the protected classes. On page 7, 21.4302, we're in education now. Age for registration in first grade and kindergarten preschool programs, that those programs shall not discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity. There's a little discussion point on this. This is not necessarily specifically talking about those students that are enrolling in pre
K or in preschool. The concept here is discrimination with regard to the family of those individuals, and that's what the discrimination call out in protected class would be with regard to. Also on page 7, we see that there's no right to deny access to public schools. Discrimination is prohibited with regard to teachers in those public schools in 7302. Moving on to page 8, in labor and employment law, we get to the employer protection circumstances and employee protection circumstances. And we see that in labor employment prohibition on paying employees less for the same work, and this is really one of the key concepts in this bill, that equal work gets equal pay regardless of who you are. So adding the protective classes there. The bottom of 8, we begin our discriminatory or unfair employment practices definition. And you see on page 9 in Romanet 1 that it would be illegal to refuse to hire, discharge, promote, demote, etc. Once again, we have a list of protected classes, and we add to that class sexual orientation or gender identity. And then in Romanet 2, similar circumstances, the employment agency or labor organization would be prohibited from discrimination as well for those classes. You see in 35.1620, we move to Department of Health. And on page 10, the Department of Health would not be able to discriminate on those practices either by the first edition. Page 10, consent to treat minors, treatment of infected persons. And then finally, 42.4107, uniform application for welfare programs in the state. The discrimination is prohibited, once again, based on these protected classes and the provision of the list. Now, Mr. Chairman, in the state of Wyoming right now, we use a system where we have protected classes. The list typically prohibits discrimination based on things such as sex, color, race, religion, national origin, disability, or age. And this list of protected classes has been demonstrated to be insufficient in certain circumstances. We'll probably hear more in testimony about those circumstances. But this goes in, corrects that, so that we have equity in the state of Wyoming, recognizing that we have a little bit of disparity now. Mr. Chairman, I hope the Senate will favor this legislation, and I look forward to the debate and discussion from the body.
We have two committee of the whole amendments. At this point in time, I'd like to have the reading clerk read in those amendments.
Senate File 115. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to corrected copy, page 1, line 8.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 115.
Oh, just a second, guys. That office there.
Drew. Thank you.
Drew.
Thank you. Mike's my brother. Anyway, I'll start over again. Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole reading Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 115 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. What this does, Mr. Chairman, is there's been some recent movement in the faith to which I belong and in a press release and some announcements and with the help of the newest senator from up near Sheridan, he traced down the a recent employment discrimination statute that's been passed in the city of the capital of the state to our southwest, and in doing so, what we're doing is trying to clarify and make sure as we look through here, it does a couple things, which for me. Create a little bit of a paradigm shift for me with this, Mr. Chairman. With respect to what this amendment does, is it takes and it does a couple of things. And the intent is to start with. I think it's probably easiest to, in the amendment to go to the middle of page 1 and look at the definitions for gender identity and also sexual orientation. In this instance, Mr. Chairman. What we do with gender identity, it just simply means, as it states there, that it means an individual's actual or perceived gender, appearance, mannerisms, or other characteristics with or without regard to the individual's sex at birth. And also in sexual orientation, the definition there being that it is an individual's actual or perceived orientation as to heterosexual, homosexual, or bisexual. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, what the intent of this is to go through and revise some of the, it's just, I think it clarifies and helps us understand that when we do this, that all of our sexual orientations, regardless of what they are going to be protected under the statute, and our genders, whether it's the gender you were born with or one that you believe that you need to manifest in your life and that's what you are, it allows for that as well. And so with that, then, it does a couple things. It would just clarify that when we're talking about gender identity, that all of us have that equal protection under the law with respect to that discrimination. The other thing that this does is create an exemption for a religious organization. And this may be imperfect right now, and it may need some work moving forward on a second reading amendment. But what it does is it takes and adopts the basic language from the city's ordinance on this that I referred to before, and simply provides a religious organization is any kind of religious corporation, association, educational institution, society, trust, or entity or association which is wholly owned or controlled subsidiary or agency of any religious corporation, association, society, trust, or corporation sole. Just by brief way of explanation, Mr. Chairman, a corporation sole is what you find in various political offices and offices in churches and religious organizations. You sometimes find that a certain individual position is incorporated so that when there is an excessive event, such as it might be an archbishop, and so when the archbishop passes away, the next archbishop assumes the role of the archbishop, and so the corporation is the archbishop. And so what that does, it facilitates the business end of a succession in that type of organization so that person just comes in and succeeds. So all the rights and the vestitures might be property, might be all kinds of things that the church holds on behalf through that corporation soul. So that's what a corporation soul is. It usually is in the context of a political or religious organization. And so what it does, Mr. Chairman, is it identifies and clarifies that there is an exception from discrimination or being charged or under the criminal statutes or being having a civil complaint filed against you in the employment statutes if it's a religious organization. And the broad nature of that is such that it would apply to the main ecclesiastical provisions of a church. It would apply to whether they had auxiliary organizations that might be hospitals, they might be schools, they might be social relief organizations, they might be youth organizations, other things like that, which are basically auxiliary or auxiliary arms or functions of an individual religious organization. And so it protects that. And so, for example, if you had a particular church that had a religious objection to various practices that would be otherwise protected under this act, they would not be forced to hire a teacher or an advisor, a counselor, somebody to come in and that would potentially advocate or things that would be contrary to that religious organization's sincerely held beliefs. And so with that, that's the basic function of the amendment. It does it, just as a reminder, the body, the 696, Title VI, when you look at the bill, are criminal statutes and Title 27, which you see it later in the bill, are the employment statutes, and that's the purpose of the bill. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for questions and urge ask for the body's favorable approval of this amendment.
Any questions on the amendment? Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, without vouching for the language that we started with in the bill, and in support of this amendment, I'm not sure that we're finished examining this issue. And here's my concern. I think the language is an improvement, but I still have a concern because generally one of the things we have to recognize when you get to the courts with respect to this issue about members, pastors, religious societies, there's a strong body of law that I would describe as this, is that as far as the purely ecclesiastical and spiritual practice of a church or religious society
are concerned, civil courts have steadfastly asserted the want of jurisdiction to hear those disputes. So if there's a lot of law with respect to whether or not the courts even have a jurisdiction to undertake, and as we look at these exceptions, we need to make sure that we're not inadvertently asking for some examination or some concession that the religious societies, which is probably even a broader definition than we have here, that they have the courts have any opportunity or right to look at any of their internal dealings. In general, the law has been and should be that with the division of church and state, that the religious societies ordinarily, the Catholic Church, almost all churches have their own internal processes to address issues internal to their religion, whether it be discrimination, whether it be discharge of a pastor for any reason, those sorts of things. And the courts have generally stayed away and said, we have no jurisdiction to consider. And the concern that I think that we need to address and make sure that we're addressing here, or that we're being careful of, is not to suggest, by way of negative, that the courts would have any business looking at any activities of a church at all. And to the extent that, the law is extensive and complex, and what we certainly don't want to do is suggest that courts or grant something that would cause the courts to think, well, maybe we're supposed to go in and make an inquiry about this item. And in general, even if we didn't have this language, one would expect the courts to say, we're not even going to take jurisdiction over the issue because this is a pastoral or original issue of the religious society, and so you don't even get to come and inquire about the problem. So lack of jurisdiction is an important issue that we need to make sure we maintain for the separation of church and state.
Any other discussion? Seeing none, the question. Oh, Senator Kinski. Okay. Seeing no further discussion, this question is on Senator Perkins' motion that Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, the Senate File 115, do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The amendment has passed. We do have another Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2. Would the reading clerk read that in?
Senate File 115, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, page 1, lines 12 through 14.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 115 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, what this does is this is a separate exemption. And so I brought it separately because I didn't want to get bogged down in the religious exemption. I'll outline the kind of the pros and the cons of what this is for. There's various Supreme Court cases out there about things like our expressive associations, and there is a Supreme Court case out that uses the term expressive association and is in the context of litigation regarding this, and it's a well-known young men's association where they earn merit badges and things like that, and so that's the nature of the expressive association. And the And so, anyway, Mr. Chairman, as I looked around for trying to find an opportunity or a way that maybe that we as a state can move together forward on this issue, looking again to the city ordinance that I referred to before, this was also an exception, like a religious organization, to some of these things. And so the argument that having this in is that it makes it clear that expressive associations, which is obviously a broad term that the courts have battled with in numerous court cases, and I would mention to the body that it was a narrow decision. The case I was referring to was a 5-4 decision by the Supreme Court, as was Roe versus Wade. But so we certainly have had 5-4 decisions in our past. But anyway, this expressive association, the argument is basically whether or not we have to put in statute things or codify things that the Supreme Court has held, particularly on narrow decisions like that, or whether it helps or assists as the courts in examining our law, whether having an expressive association as an exemption would would assist the court as a court in Wyoming might interpret this law, might interpret this under our law. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I think that outlines the nature of it. Again, I stand in favor of it. It seemed to me a reasonable compromise in some respects to assure that those types of associations like that have the protection that they want, so that they can go about. Obviously, an expressive association is the first. It kind of implicates the First Amendment right and some other rights that are in the Bill of Rights. In that regard, and so whether we pass this here or not, they probably still have that right. But nevertheless, in my opinion, I felt better, a little bit better with it in. And with that, we can begin the discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I understand the one organization to which the sponsor of this amendment is referring to, but does this cover any other organizations? Because I've never heard of the term expressive association before. How big a loophole is this that we're talking about?
Senator Perkins, then Senator Rothfuss.
Oh, I'll defer to Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's along the same lines. We now in the bill have definitions for gender identity, religious organization, and sexual orientation. Those are terms I more or less understand, but expressive association, I'm not sure I fully do understand that one. Was there any thought to giving a definition for that or narrowing that down? That would be the first question. And the second is going to the last comment the good senator from Natrona County said, this is a First Amendment issue that is typically being influenced by the Supreme Court right now, and there are decisions that guide it. And obviously, we're not going to infringe on those decisions because those rights are clear from the Supreme Court decisions handed down. So my question would really be if we're relying fully on a statement which is more or less we can't infringe on areas where we've been told are unconstitutional to infringe upon by the courts with relation to the Supreme Court decisions for the First Amendment, why do we need to say that in statute if that is the limitation? And if it's broader than that, Mr. Chairman, I think I need to understand how we broaden it.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And certainly I don't profess to be an expert, and this is not certainly constitutional law is not my area of expertise. But what I understand from what I did with trying to answer those same questions, and looking to it, expressive association is an association that simply comes together, and in that association, what they do is they, in their beliefs, they express certain things that are basically moral beliefs, and by their actions and by their creeds. And the organization we were talking about, as I think is well publicized, and everyone knows that what there was is there was a prohibition against certain sexual orientation individuals coming and being participating, either being members or either participating in the leadership of that organization. And so as they went out and went through that case, ultimately what they held was that organization had the right to express in its view that it did not want or want to allow the sexual orientation individuals to participate necessarily in leadership or participate as in membership in that organization. Ultimately, that organization has now decided that those situations can be decided individually by the sponsoring organization, most of which are churches, although certainly not exclusively churches. But the expressive association was the term expressive association comes directly out of the language in that case, which the Chief Justice in that case was the one who wrote the opinion, and that was his term, expressive association, and the case defines and explains that that's what it is. It's a First Amendment. Associations that have or an integral to its function or have various First Amendment expressions. That's probably the best explanation I can give, Mr. Chairman. I think this is one that you can decide how you feel about that. I think you can vote this one up or down. But I offer it because I did appreciate, and as I reviewed the city ordinance that I looked at and that I based this from, I looked at it and it was in there and it seemed to me reasonable. At the end of the day, I don't know that it's for the reasons stated by my good friend from the Ivory Towers, I don't know that it's necessary, certainly this isn't the first time we've incorporated language from court cases into the laws that we've made down here. I doubt that it would be the last if we did. Thank you.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm in favor of the amendment, but once again, wondering whether as we move forward we can begin to focus a little bit more on the clear definition that the expressive association really ought to be an auxiliary of or an affiliate of a religious society, so that there's a purpose for the underlying, so that we get back to the underlying purpose of the exemption is a separation of church and state purpose and not some other ulterior purpose. So, I mean, we should have great empathy for those churches that, or religious societies that have organizations to try to develop youth, and they want to share their, they want to have some control over those efforts that are largely conducted with even within the religious society, and they ought to have some right of self-determination, if you will, with respect to those items. But I think we can tighten it up and find language that will make folks more comfortable by not just saying it's the nature of the expressive association, rather it's the auxiliary or affiliate nature with a religious society that gives it the exemption.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Rising on and for the amendment. Members of the Senate, I believe that what we're engaged in is a search. A search for the right kind of words to find the balance that I think our society wants to strike. And that balance is between adhering to the Savior's admonition about not condemning, about adhering to the admonition from our founding fathers that this be a society of tolerance, while at the same time respecting people of faith and their firm and sincerely held convictions. Does this amendment or the other strike that balance perfectly? No. But we have the commitment of two of the greatest wordsmiths in this body to get that balance right. Because in the end, I think I know I want to be able to support this bill and still be able to look in the eye my friends that are of very firm religious conviction and say, we stood up against discrimination and yet respected your strongly held religious views. I would urge your support of the amendment.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, just one admonition to people who are drafting things is try to tighten this up. I would urge them to be cautious about tying things too closely to specific denominations. We have a number of groups in the society that have very strong convictions that are coming from various religious doctrines, religious traditions that are not necessarily affiliated with a specific denomination. And I think you need to pay attention to that sort of thing as well.
Senator Von Blatron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the good senator, the legal from Natrona County, did a great job. I think it needs to be tightened up a little bit on second reading, but as this bill moves forward, the thought pattern is probably correct, and we need to work on this a little bit.
Senator Perkins.
And, Mr. Chairman, I can certainly pledge that I'm willing to do that. I think that the good senator from, I can't say the Sheridan County, or say Sheridan because it's one and the same, but anyway. The senator's exactly right. My intent is not to be a my way or the highway kind of thing. It is a search. It's trying to find a common ground that that we can come in and that we can all, at least that I can support and vote aye on this bill if we can reach this, medium that we're looking for. Thank you.
Okay, the question is on Senator Perkins' motion that Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2 is adopted. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The amendment has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Any discussion on Senate File 115? Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to present some information. But before I do this, Mr. Chairman, I would like to say that I think any form of discrimination within a civil society is repugnant. But I'm not so sure this bill specifically deals with discrimination when we've heard the presenters go all the way and talk about protected classes. So my question is this legislation really about discrimination or is it about developing protected classes? Mr. Chairman, yesterday I had handed out because I was curious as to what the extent of the problem was in the state of Wyoming, so I asked Department of Workforce Services if you can find that handout. It should have been handed out yesterday afternoon, but I'm going to go through that. So it says roughly there's 200 charges processed each year by the Department of Workforce Services, and then it breaks those down, and that's what I was curious is do we have what's the extent of the problem in Wyoming that we deal with? And is this the remedy for that solution? So if you can find that, members, I'm going to walk through that. So it says roughly there's 200 charges processed each year. 30 are related to sex or gender. And I asked them to further break that down if they could capture that. And there's a memo on the second page. We'll go through that. But specific to sexual orientation or gender ideas with the Department of Workforce Services, and they also testified before the Judiciary Committee, says on this fact sheet that it was between 12 and 15 cases a year. So if we look at that 30% that's rolled into that, so basically when we get to sexual orientation or gender ID, it comes to about 6 to 7.5% of all the complaints coming to the Department of Workforce Services are due to gender ID or sexual orientation. But as we go down those other complaints that come from employees around the state, 42% are retaliation, which really doesn't have anything to do with discrimination. 18% include age. 25% include disabilities. 8% are related to national origin. Of those, 80% are Hispanic or Mexican. 5% race complaints, primarily African Americans, and 1% American Indian, and 4% pertaining to religion. If you can, I want to flip over to the information that the fact sheet that the Department of Workforce Service provided me. And I think it's interesting because you've got other information that's been disseminated on your desk that says there's absolutely no protection for people of based on their sexual orientation and gender ID. But if you go through that, in 2012, the Equal Opportunity Commission launched a strategic enforcement plan, and it goes through there. Based on the fact sheet provided by the Department of Workforce Services that you should have before you, if you go down there, it says under the EEOC directive that relied on a Supreme Court case, if you go through that, it says basically they can enforce in the state of Wyoming right now. The bar is pretty high, but there is provisions within the state of Wyoming to already enforce workforce discrimination against people of sexual orientation and gender identification. The bar is, it says, in employment settings where an employer's belief about gender stereotypes has motivated an adverse employment action, that discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender ID is prohibited by federal law. So in those blatant cases of employment discrimination against people with different sexual orientations and gender ID, we already have that remedy within the state of Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, you've got another handout on your desk, and I think this comes to the root of my question on this. Is this really about discrimination? If you could, you've got a spreadsheet here that I've handed out. You can pick that up. What I'd like to do is, because this goes right to the bill, Mr. Chairman, is this really about discrimination, or is it really about just carving out another protected class in the statute? So when we go through the bill, if you look on the left-hand side of your handout here, it goes through every one of the statutes that are carved out in the Senate File 115. So we walk through that list on 1111, 101. We've protected race, color, religion, sex, age, national origin, and economic status, and now we're bringing in sexual orientation and gender ID. You go down to 69101. What I'm not going to do is enumerate each one, but I'm going to tell you where this bill doesn't cover those forms of discrimination. So if we go to 69101, doesn't cover age discrimination, doesn't cover economic status, your creed, your disability. If we go down to 69102 under this bill, doesn't cover religion, doesn't cover age, doesn't cover economic status, creed. You get the gist. But what it also does in this bill, and I'll bring your attention to one that really caught my eye, is I want you to go down to 274302. And I think this really speaks to the root of my concern, is carving out substantial additional protected classes. So if we want to turn to that section, so go to 474302, if you would, please, members of the body. 274302, page 8. This deals with prohibition on paying employees less for the same work and what it was initially designed to do, that women should get paid the same rate as men. Well, what this bill does is it brings in under there, and it says gender ID or sexual orientation. I don't think anybody has any problem with that. But if we go down to subsection 4 on there, it says a differential based on any other factor other than gender. For any reason, you can't pay an employee any different, but we bring in the language now and says gender ID and sexual orientation, and it's already covered under the statute. So we have a double positive here that you're protected at least twice under the same language of the bill. But I think, members, look at the spreadsheet. Is this really about discrimination? If it was really about discrimination, we'd come into every one of these statutes. Under some of these, the Veterans Commission, it doesn't exempt discrimination from race, color, age, national origin. If we're really, really worried about discrimination, every one of those first five columns ought to be checked. Because those first five columns come out of the Civil Rights Act in 1964. Race, color, religion, sex, and national origin. It's not covered. This bill doesn't speak to discrimination. It speaks, and I think the presenter highlighted it, a protected class of people. So I just want to make sure that what we're voting on here is it discrimination, or are we just creating additional protected classes? Mr. Chairman, on and against the bill.
Any further discussion? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I'm very reluctantly rising on this bill. Mr. Chairman, I like a lot of this bill. I truly do. I like the parts where the government can't discriminate in services that it provides. I absolutely believe it. I believe that entities that receive government funding should also, that non-discrimination should be extended. But I'm not sure really how I feel about private entities, Mr. Chairman. We've done a lot of things to carve out a religious exemption, and I agree with that. Certainly I agree with that. But not all convictions that are closely held are based on religion, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, people have the right to be stupid. They don't have the right to hurt other people. But in their private activities, they have the right to do stupid things. And I think discriminating against this class is very stupid. It's very bad for Wyoming. You know, I've stood up here and fought on earlier bills about this. It kind of comes down to the First Amendment and your rights of speech and association. I think that extends to your right to earn a living, and in learning, making that living, that you If you decide you don't want to do business with someone, you decide you don't want to do business with someone. You might be very stupid, but I support the right to be stupid. And I'm probably living proof of it on numerous occasions. But Mr. Chairman, I'd like to see this bill modified in further readings to eliminate the implications for private business that are not engaged in interstate commerce, don't receive government money of any sort. I'd like to support their right to be stupid.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill, as you all know, I'm a retired commander of the Air National Guard here in Wyoming, and you know, in the military, we had big issues with gender equality in the past, and we got past that, and there is zero tolerance now in the military for that sort of thing. So, you know, I come from that environment where we had so much pain in that, and I really want to see it move into the private sectors as well. Also, I'm an active businessman in my community, and you know, in my profession, and in my business, we don't condone any type of discrimination based on sexual orientation. If we allow discrimination, you know, we will really hinder recruiting of good, talented people to Wyoming, yeah, especially in our tech industries and in our telecom industries. There's folks that we could bring to Wyoming, you know, that have a lot of talent that might otherwise stay away from us if we don't protect folks from discrimination. Not only will those people not come, but businesses themselves might not choose to relocate here. So I'm a little bit fearful of that. If we have the ability to discriminate. Also, you know, we're known as the equality state. I think we need to put our pride in ourselves. We pride ourselves on fairness, on not judging people. We always have. I think that we want to send that message to the rest of the United States, to the rest of the world, for that matter, that we don't discriminate for religion, race, age, color, sex, and sexual orientation and gender ID. So both in my professions, military and in my architecture, you know, we support non-discrimination. And I think Wyoming needs to be a leader in supporting that as well. We are the equality state.
Are you ready for the question? Oh, Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. I, too, wear lots of hats, and one of them is I'm an ordained clergy person. And speaking from that particular hat, I'm really excited about our efforts to work together and to find common ground. I always appreciate it when my own personal beliefs are respected, and I work very, very hard to respect the beliefs of other people. So I really applaud us in doing that as we move forward with this bill. We've all been inundated with all kinds of information about this bill. And there was one piece of information that came into our boxes that kind of troubled me. So I just wanted to take just a couple of minutes and kind of respond to some troubling statements that I had there. One was this particular piece of information said that Senate File 115 is unsalvageable from a standpoint of religious liberty. And they listed a variety of reasons. And one, they said that because this legislation is grounded upon a secular ideology. Well, we are a secular body. We are looking at the difference between church and state. But I'm going to tell you that for me, and this is only me, because we have to approach it from a secular view, but for me, it's my faith ideology. My faith has dealt with this particular issue, and we believe that love and respect and inclusion and being non-judgmental and upholding our baptismal covenant, which says respect the worth and dignity of every human being. That's what I believe, and that's my faith ideology, and I hope it's our secular ideology as well. I was troubled by maybe some assertions that somehow I'm not taking my vow as a legislator to uphold the Constitution seriously. And I take that as seriously as I do my baptismal covenant. I take really seriously Article 1, Section 2, all members of the human race are equal. Article 1, Section 18, free exercise and enjoyment of religious profession and worship without discrimination. Article 1, Section 22, the rights of labor to have just protection of laws. So I see this as more of an issue. It's always been there, but we never talked about it. Now we're talking about it, and because we're talking about it, I'm not sure we are respecting the rights and dignity of every human being. I support people being who they are, wherever they are, whenever they are. I'm happy that we can work together to maybe iron out additional nuances in this bill, but I just wanted to share those thoughts with you in support of the bill. Thank you.
Senator Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And it might be a surprise to many of you, but I've been told that I speak softly, and apologize for that. Even with a microphone, you still might not be able to hear me, which in some cases might be a good thing. But just a couple of points, and I'm speaking in favor of the bill. And as far as the amendment, I think the question was made as to, to vote on it depending on how we feel. And I think that's, it's a good statement, but on the other hand, it's not so much how I feel, but how the person on the street would interpret that language, because it was pretty confusing, to me anyway, in terms of what's an expressive organization or association. But 3 points that I'll make. First of all, and I'm sure I don't have to mention this, but I suspect that all of us here in this chamber are members of one or more protected classes. We all, in the right circumstances, have a right to file a discrimination charge based on either our race, religion, age, handicap, whatever the case might be. I'm sure we can all be part of one or more protected classes. In my case, I might just mention a couple of things, because we all know discrimination can be very brutal, or it can be very subtle. And there's many cases of discrimination that go unreported for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes people don't know that they're being discriminated against. The first experience I ever had of discrimination was when I was about 5 or 6. My sister and I were going swimming, and she was allowed in, and I wasn't. My sister kept after me to, what was keeping me, and, I finally told her, God wouldn't let me in. Anyway, the guard at the lifeguard at the swimming pool told her that the reason they wouldn't let me in was because they didn't allow Mexicans. My sister said, well, that's my brother, so they kicked her out, too. She's lighter complected than I am. My father managed to get that resolved. But the other time, and it wasn't that long ago, here in the state, I was denied reemployment when it was discovered that I was of a particular political party. Got that resolved. And that was here in this state. The most recent example of discrimination didn't happen to me, but one that I'm familiar with, and many of you are familiar with, is, and several of us here are members of that civic organization that not too long ago, 20 years ago maybe, denied membership to women. It seems kind of hard to believe that that a certain organization that's civic in nature, community-oriented, denied membership to women. And, you know, that can be very subtle and very, very brutal at times. Are we developing another protected class? Yeah. And, it's needed. Because for too many years, I'm sure many of these people, when they were discriminated against, first of all, probably either didn't know it, or if they did, you know, they didn't want to make an issue out of it. You know, it happens with many of us when we face something traumatic, you know, we just try to move on. So anyway, with that said, I support the bill and thank you for your time.
Are you ready for the question? Senator Dockstader.
I'll be brief.
On and off.
I'm not sure at this point. I appreciate the efforts to reach out and find some balance here. Obviously, we're doing that with the amendment, but we are on the bill. As I hear the discussion, I appreciate both sides of it. I think we have to have the civility and respect needed from any side of this issue. I've contemplated and read it over. I do have concerns when we talk about bumping up against individual private rights and businesses. I have concerns when I don't see a balance in the statutes with this handout here. That's a great concern. But ultimately, I think we need to find a balance. Can we do it in so short a time? We step into the back room over here and we hear people from around the state. When you think about it, as complicated as this issue can be from any side, it worries me that we bring it through a process that a few hours there, a few hours here, and ultimately we have a statute on a very serious matter that affects a lot of lives on any side of the issue. So I'm going to contemplate this as we all head out and take care of our business over the weekend and hope that maybe we've found some balance with the amendment, study it out in my mind, think about it, and hopefully it's there, but I think ultimately we have to have civility and respect for everyone involved. Thank you.
Question been called for. Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, as we move forward, and I go back to the handout that protected classes that's with the check marks, I would caution people to read too much into that. In many instances, for example, the statutes are referred to, religion, for example, in some of these sections was intentionally left because, for example, in areas where if you're mandated to have a shot, you can't discriminate for some of these, but certainly you could discriminate on religious beliefs. And when you look at some of these, some of them are because there are carry clause, but in some instances they are in fact specific. So if you just go down and take it is interesting, I acknowledge that you have checks on every box under sexual orientation, gender ID, but if you look at race, there's only two boxes that are missing. And when you look at sex, there's only one, two, three boxes missing. But if you go back and look at it, in some instances you can tell that it was simply an archaic law that's not been updated. And in some instances it's intentional so that, and when you start looking at some of the other things, gender, ancestry, each of those have, some of those statutes are very specific and have no relevance to this debate. So caution, I think if we're going to have this, we ought to really look at it, but let's collect those statutes, put them behind them, and see what they actually are.
Okay, let's try the question this time. All those in favor of Senator Christensen's motion that when the committee rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 115, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
Senate File 115 is passed Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Second.
You've heard the motion.
What?
All in favor say
aye. Oh, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. Motion carried.
Motion carried.
Motion carried.
Good.
Do we have any messages that have arrived?
It's Friday, and we're going to
do this.
You're
never
going to
get off the
115. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you for reminding me. Will the reading clerk please read the report of the Committee of the Whole?
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 124, due pass amended. Senate File 144, due pass. Senate File 116, due pass. Senate File 133, due pass amended. Senate File 130, due pass amended. And Senate File 115, due pass amended. Senator Meyer, Chairman.
Chairman Meyer. Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion's been adopted. Reports, which do we have? Messages from the House.
February the 6th, 2015, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading, passed. Amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill Number 214, Practice of Law Amendments. Ayes 53, noes 5, excused 2. House Bill Number 209, Transfer of Federal Lands. Ayes 36, noes 22, excused 2. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Any other reports? Does that clear the desk? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February 9th.
Monday? Announcement, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. in the normal committee room following bills. House Bill 58, Developmental Disability Service Transition Grants, continued from today. House Bill 33, Workers' Comp Premiums Experience Modification. And House Bill 71, Nursing Education Programs.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 8, Transportation, will meet Monday upon adjournment in Room S-14 to discuss House Bill 22, Disabled Veterans License Plates. We are also meet with railroad representatives to discuss issues and concerns.
Senator Rosiglione.
Thank you, Mr. President. My consigliere. Appropriations Committee will meet at noon on Monday, February 9th in S-11 by the Smoking Lounge to consider the following House bills. House Bill 65, Engross, State Employees Group Insurance, County Employees. House Bill 67, Engross, Wyoming Retirement System Amendments. And House Bill 72, Volunteer Firefighter and EMT Pension Account.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, will meet Monday morning at 8 a.m. in Room S-1 to consider, to continue on House Bill 17, Engrossed Sexual Assault Protection Orders, and to consider House Bill 18, Engrossed Drone Protection Act, and House Bill 49, Confidentiality of Participants Involved in Execution.
Senator Von Fladeren.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee Number 9, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet Monday, 15 minutes after noon recess, Room S-18, to consider House Bill 53, Engrossed Minerals to Value-Added Products Program, House Bill 27, Engrossed NRC Agreement State Authorization, House Bill 60, Engrossed Trust Company Amendments.
Senator Coe.
Mr. President, your committee number four, Education, will meet Monday morning at 8 o'clock upstairs at S-13. Take up House Bill 10, Engrossed Education State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement. House Bill 23, Next Generation Science Standards, and the notice says House Bill 73, Engrossed Development of Education Standards, but I'm going to change that to Wednesday, so we'll just deal with the first two bills.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Member of the Senate, just a heads up for sort of the schedule we'll be looking at next week. And, of course, remember that Monday is the last day for committee of the whole in the House of Origin. Obviously, two will be last day for second reading, and Wednesday will be third, will be last day for third reading in the House of Origin. We'll also start committee of the whole for the supplemental budget on the 4th, and we'll finish it up on Thursday the 5th. All your budget amendments are due by 5 p.m. that day. And, Mr. President, plan on some longer days next week and probably coming in early Thursday so we can get our work done as early as we can. Thank you.
The staff are looking at puzzled at your Thursday the 5th. Is that right? Your dates are messed up, but I think we get the gist of it. 11th and 12th.
What's that?
Oh, the date that you mentioned, I think next Thursday, Friday, the 11th and 12th is all. But we're good. I think everybody understands it's next week. All right. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Senate shall stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Monday, February 9th. Have a good weekend. Senators will stand.